This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
What's up, Style Crew? We're back for another episode of Style in Conversation. And if you're new here, I want to go ahead and ask you to hit the follow button on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere that you stream your podcast. If you are viewing the visuals on YouTube, please go ahead and follow my channel, which is Styled by Jessica Lauren. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Style and Conversation Pop. With that being said, I am trying something new with this episode. So as you can see, I'm flying solo. As you can see and hear, I'm flying solo for this episode. And the reason for that is I'm trying something new. I'm introducing a new series, which will begin airing in between the original series regulars that I have throughout the seasons. But this episode, this first episode of the series, is called These Are My Thoughts. And the premise behind this episode, I've held off on doing these types of things, minus I did a post-election episode with my good friend, Sir, of the 2020 podcast, Please Say the LLC. But I have been feeling urged to do a little more. And there are a few topics that I want to recap and share my thoughts on. And the overall premise of Style and Conversation is not changing. This is just in addition to that. The premise of Style and Conversation is still to create a vibrant, welcoming space for women interested in learning about all things from health, relationships, entrepreneurship, style, beauty, relationships, and everything in between. That is not changing. That is not going anywhere. That is still the main focus of this podcast. However, there are certain shows that I frequently view. There are certain social topics that catch my attention that I want to start diving in on the podcast and exploring. And for this first, These Are My Thoughts, I will be recapping the Married at First Sight season 18, which they just aired their final episode this past Tuesday. I'll also be recapping Felicia Rashad's interview from this week on The Breakfast Club, as well as sharing my thoughts on this drama amongst the hosts of The Breakfast Club regarding Jeff Hilarious and Lauren LaRosa. With that being said, we are going to kick it off by talking about Married at First Sight, season 18. So for any of my Married at First Sight fans listening, you all know that they wrap season 18. And for anyone who does not watch the show, the premise of Married at First Sight is a social matchmaking experiment. And essentially there are three experts, one who focuses on the religious and spiritual aspect, Pastor Cal, I love, Dr. Pepper, who focuses on the, I don't know the correct terminology because I'm not a therapist, but I would say the therapist side of things. And then you have Dr. Pia, who focuses on the sexual and intimate side of the marriage. And what they'll do is they will take five couples, so 10 individuals, and they will match them. They get thousands of applicants in these cities, and then the producers also seek singles in these cities as well. And so they match them based off of different assessments for compatibility, sexual compatibility, financial, religion, a myriad of factors. And honestly, it's one of my favorite shows, and the reason being is because I truly enjoy studying human behavior, as well as, if you've noticed from the podcast, some of the guests that I've interviewed, I am someone that really loves to take a deep dive into understanding relationships, how to be better in relationships, and just getting all the information that I need. So that's one of the reasons that I love the show. So this season, they actually, as you all kept hearing rumblings that there was a couple swap, and everything was kept under wraps. So we had no details until the season started airing and you were able to put different clues together and try to figure things out. And after a while, it became very obvious. My honest impression was that the wife swap took place in the middle of the season. It wasn't that it was something insidious that took place off camera. Now, let me back up before I get deeper into that, but I just wanted to give you all a quick nugget into what one of the big bombshells this season were, because every season has these big bombshells. And for anyone who doesn't watch Married at First Sight, you have some couples that come out successfully, some marriages that come out successfully at the end of the season, and some that don't. And so the premise again is to take it a step back. They are matched, they're married for 8 weeks, they're sent on a honeymoon, they place them in an apartment, and they go through this experiment of getting to know each other. They're now married, discussing finances, day-to-day expectations from their person, all of the things. And at the end of the 8 weeks, they have something that's called decision day. And they then decide whether they want to stay married or get a divorce. And again, you have some successful couples that have come out of this franchise, and then you have some that haven't. So I want to run through all of the couples. Let's start with Juan and Carla. So Juan and Carla, I honestly thought, aesthetically, looking at them first glance, beautiful couple. I initially thought, based off of their first interaction, they would build chemistry. I was wrong in that. It seems that Carla, being this free spirit and not extremely structured, was a turnoff for Juan, who is someone who's extremely structured, extremely has a plan for his life, knows the direction that he's going in, and they just didn't work out. My overall assessment about them as people, again, beautiful. I would love to hang out with Carla one-on-one, just to hear her. She just is a curious person, just hear her say amazing and You know, what really stood out to me was the anniversary episode, the way she really rallied and got MM up from the table when she was having a moment. That really stood out to me and let me know that she's a girl's girl. So I really like that quality, and that's some of what I have to say about Juan and Carla. I hate that they didn't make it, but at the same time, it seems that at first it seemed like they ended up in a different place, but apparently off camera there's been some drama. So I'm still confused as to how that kicked off, but that's the gist of what I have to say about them. Ikechi and Imam, from their wedding day, it seemed like they would be a great couple. Ikechi expressed his strong affinity for Black women. He had this image in his head of having like this Michelle Obama type, and the experts felt that they had matched him with that. With Imam, she was this beautiful, established Black woman. She has her own business. I believe it's a med spa. Shout out to you, girl. And shortly after the honeymoon, my personal assessment is that he felt intimidated by her accomplishments, by her income, and that just caused him to check out and start to display the behavior that he did. And my ultimate take after they didn't make it and am becoming engaged, you know, my impression is that she is the one who does desire to be in a marriage covenant. And I want to give her compassion in that, because I think one thing I've found in society is that I think we can easily forget that having that connection to another human being and being choosing to grow in love and nurture a long-standing relationship or marriage, whatever you choose to be in, that's a normal human desire if you desire that. And so I want to give her some grace with that. But being that her and Ikechi did not decide to stay married, and she ended up becoming engaged to Brandon, I think their engagement personally, from my perspective, was rather swift. And I personally am someone, I am an optimist when it comes to love, but I also believe in a steady pace. And I can't say that they have that. But at this point, they have weathered a major life event, which was her, unfortunately, carrying their child early in their relationship, and they have navigated that. So my prayer is that whatever issues led him to his first divorce and deciding to end that marriage, they don't repeat themselves in a relationship with that man. And I hope they do go the distance. Camille and Thomas, they were the one couple that was actually matched that decided to stay married on decision day. And let me just say, I like them as a couple. I really do. Their connection appeared to be genuine, not forced. They both appeared to want marriage and what came along with that. And more importantly, they appeared to want marriage with each other. I thought it was really cute, even on decision day, how Camille immediately walked in and just said how much she missed her husband and greeted him, and I just thought that was so cute. They look beautiful together. They look, but beyond them looking like a beautiful couple, they appear to respect each other and just desire for their marriage to work. I love that for them. The one thing I will say that I did not care for about seeing as a part of their journey early on in their marriage, I didn't care way that Camille challenged Thomas's Blackness. And I can completely understand
being matched with someone that is normal, outside of the norm of what you have normally gone towards. But I also think there's something to be said about sometimes a pattern needing to be broken. That's the first thing. The second thing is, being a Black person in America, I don't like how this conversation comes up in our community towards each other, because I think being Black is not a monolithic experience, number one. And number two, the other thing I didn't care for is that, and I say this with love as a light-skinned Black person, but I am a, to be clear, both of my parents are Black. I'm not at all saying that Camille is less Black, but the reality of the situation is she's a mixed race, just like Thomas.
So this podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
That she chose to challenge his Blackness. It bothered me that she chose to challenge his Blackness. But I wonder how she would have received that had someone else outside of the situation challenged her Blackness because of her being a mixed race. Because, again, let's be clear, I'm not saying that that's what needs to take place, but let's be honest, we all have heard the challenges of people of mixed race and Blackness being challenged, which I didn't agree with. Let me just make that, continue to say that. But I just felt that it was irresponsible of her to continue to do that. And I'm glad that after a few episodes, she backed off. And they were able to develop their connection naturally. I didn't have a problem with her saying, like, hey, you know, we can turn up the swag a little bit. Give him some earrings. And I, you know, invest in some different wardrobe pieces. That's fine. But I didn't like the way she questioned his Blackness, especially, again, when I reiterate with both of them being of mixed race. I don't think either of their Blackness should have been challenged. And the one thing I didn't care for and I did want to highlight about their experience. But again, all in all, lovely couple. They appear to be in it for the right reasons. I'm very happy that they made it. Next, I want to get to Madison and Alan. You know, my impression from watching the show, it was very obvious that Madison was not attracted to Alan sexually. And my thoughts on that, number one, I just want to say that I acknowledge the bravery it takes for the cast members that come on the show, actual intention of being married, not for any other motivation. But those, and I'm not implying that she didn't, I do think she came on the show to be married. But one thing I have found after many seasons of watching this show is that I think people say that they're open-minded to whoever they get at the aisle, but in reality, that's not always the case. And I do think natural, non-forced attraction is something that's important. And I think that, in my opinion, I think women oftentimes have tried, I know I can speak for myself, I've been in dating situations where I tried to force some attraction because I'm like, well, he's such a good guy. He's such a good guy. But I've never heard a man try to force his attraction on a woman. A man is just not attracted to a woman. That's it. There's no moving forward. There's no yellow light. There's definitely no green light. There's nothing. And so I will give her that. It did not seem that she was physically attracted to him. However, from what I saw, what we all saw, was him making extreme efforts to make his marriage work. He was very committed. He wanted it to work. That was very evident. And we thought that even though the attraction wasn't there, she was trying also. But there were some things going on behind the scene that came out later in the season, which leads me to Michelle and David. As far as Michelle and David, my impression, Michelle, let's just say, first of all, from the wedding day, personally, I respected how upfront and honest David was. I respected that he took the initiative to say, this is who I am, these are my vices, this is my current situation, I'd like us to build from there. In hindsight, was it a good idea? I know you sleep. In hindsight, was it the best approach? Hindsight is 2020. I think you could go either way and say perhaps you should have left the conversation for more. But ultimately, things happened the way they were supposed to. The one thing I will say, as far as him living at home with his parents, unpopular opinion, I saw nothing wrong with it. The reason I say that is because the economy has changed drastically since. I'm 33, so it has changed drastically since my parents bought their first home. The path to ownership is a lot different. And it wasn't as if he was unemployed going on the show to be married and provide for a wife. He was fully employed man. He just happened to choose to stay at home with his parents to save money. I saw nothing wrong with that. So I think the rap that he gets as far as being a bugaboo and not being able to pay bills, I don't agree with that. I don't think that's correct. But I also partially think, had Michelle been attracted to him in a romantic way, she might have been more open to exploring that. It may not have been favorable, but I think she would have been more open to it. It pretty much just went downhill after the wedding. You know, there was a scene where she was in the bathroom, listening to her sister saying, oh, he lives so still at home. And then when they got the honeymoon, it was brutal to watch. All of their scenes were pretty brutal to watch. The nicest one I can remember is their, I think it was 4-week anniversary when they were watching their wedding video. At home, that seemed like a nice moment, but at dinner, it wasn't great. She just constantly appeared in disgust of him, to be honest with you. And so by the time this bombshell came out from him saying, making a mistake, sending this text message, saying that you are so fine, I want to eat you up, and this was about food, and it was not about the needs. It went from being to Denise to this other girl, and then the truth finally came out. He was trying to send it to Madison. He just blew up, and which leads me to the bombshell of the season, which is that Madison and David were the swap. They say they were not looking up behind the scenes, but a lot of viewers feel differently, myself included, and they're now later still together in a full-blown relationship. And my thoughts on it are this. Ultimately, each person went on the show. I do believe each person, with the exception of EKG, went on the show with the intention of being in a marriage and being married. I do believe that. Ultimately, these two people found each other. Say they're in love. they appear to be happy and in love and appear to be a decent match. However, I want to flag a few things, and these are my thoughts. The first thing is that all of the viewers that are defending their relationship and just saying, well, whatever, you know, Michelle was mean to him and ultimately they found love and good for them. Yes, ultimately they did, but they also tapped on two people in the process. Yes, Michelle didn't treat David well. I'll give you that. However, Alan did nothing to deserve. This Alan was good to Madison the entire season, even up until the end when she honestly was not deserving of the grace and respect that he gave her. So there's that aspect. The reason I disagree and have a problem with the rebuttal of they found love, they're happy, whatever, all the cheering, is we didn't, Madison and David have somewhat of an advantage. Yes, they are getting public backlash for the way that they got together, but ultimately, they didn't have the experience that the other couples had, which was the full display of their 8 week. They didn't have that scrutiny, but we haven't seen. We saw some of their interactions towards the end of the season at decision day, and then the Where Are They Now episode, as well as the reunion. But at this point, we're only seeing highlight reels of snapshots of their time together on social media, which is what they want to share with us. We're not seeing how they say, okay, they manage conflict well, great. They say, you know, they're saying these things about each other, which I'm going to get into that, just saying how they are, blah, blah, blah. And I'm hearing people say, oh, they're saying to each other. There's, in certain conversations, I keep hearing people say, or I'm seeing it in the comments, they're so into each other. They're so into each other. They're happily in love. And being into someone, for me, translates to passion. And I'm of the belief that passion, yes, I'll acknowledge, is necessary for a relationship, but it's not the only necessary factor, and it's not going to help you, not if but when life happens. And again, I acknowledge it's important, and I'll acknowledge that they both clearly have a connection and an affinity towards each other for Madison that I don't think she naturally had for Alan, and for David that he wasn't given the opportunity to develop with Michelle. But I also think that they had already developed this long before they shared it with everyone on that cabin trip. So the other thing for me, the other things that stand out is, let me take a step back. So my other assessments of the situation, personally, based off seeing it play out on the show, is I think initially this was an ego boost for Madison. I think it made her feel chosen over Michelle. I do think they developed a genuine attraction and a likeness towards each other, but I do think it was an ego boost for her that ultimately they did choose to be with each other beyond filming. That's the first thing. The other notable thing for me in the Where Are They Now episode, which was the very last episode of the season, was when they were in the kitchen and Madison was asking David, oh, are you nervous to see Michelle? Are you nervous to see anyone? And that whole conversation, and his response was, you know, I won. And her response was, yeah, you did. And for me, I feel like if you are at peace and genuinely happy in your relationship, there's no need to say who won and who didn't win. but also the way you went about it lacked integrity. And I do want to make a note. I do think Michelle using the word friend, I do think from her aspect, I think that was a little loose. I think a better term would have been acquaintance. But for David and Alan, they actually were spending time together outside of filming, outside of these group activities. So they were friends. So I do think that portion of respect wasn't there. And I think, for lack of a better word, that's more so what Michelle was trying to get at. Instead of saying my friend, I think she was trying to establish the lack of respect that existed for them to pursue this behind everyone's back. And again, and I want to acknowledge, yes, you all had contractual obligations, but there have been seasons where people have ended their marriage long before decision day. Everybody remember Alyssa, I'm a good person. Yeah, that marriage. And there have been others where things have blown up sooner. So my opinion is that had they gone to the experts and expressed this, that this could have been handled in a much different manner. So that was the first thing with them, both of them saying that they won. That was bothersome. During the reunion and even the last episode, them showing up in matching outfits, it's given Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, VMAs. When was that? Late 90s, early 2000s. It's too much. I am someone that, call me cynical, whatever you want to believe. First of all, I do believe in love and marriage and all of the things. However,
this podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
I don't, under certain circumstances, if we're taking family photos, okay, it's obvious we, as a couple, as a family, whoever we need to coordinate. If we're showing up to a reunion and our relationship was developed off a non-integral circumstance, this isn't the time for us to show up like we're about to pose for the prom photos. It just wasn't the time. That was over the top for me. Yes, they both individually, they looked great, but it was just very over the top. It was giving, we're reaching, we're really trying to let you all know, come through stunting and let you know we're here to stay. And I think these nonverbal things that are taking place are unnecessary, and it just reads like you're really going hard in the paint. And the other thing is, again, call me cynical, it is what it is, the commitment rings. Yes, I'll rock your promise ring. Like, are we in middle school again? What's going on with the promise ring? I am of the belief at our big age, if you're not married, that's cool. If you don't desire to be married, that's cool too. But if you do desire to be married, this ain't hopscotch. Be in or out. There's no reason for anybody past the age of 15 or 16. And I didn't believe in it at that age. So I definitely don't think at that big age, it's necessary to go get commitment ring. So the matching outfits, the commitment, quote unquote, commitment rings, and then Juan filming it to show us how committed you are, it's just not that serious. Like, Brad and Angelina didn't feel the need to do that. It's not that serious. Like, if y'all, clearly y'all are together, in the words of David, he's rocking with you. Like, we could have done without the matching outfits on the finale episode, which was very disrespectful considering how you got together. You show up in this environment that way, and then you show up to the reunion, and then we're showing that we got commitment rings. We're not 12 years old. Like, what are we doing? It's ridiculous. And the other thing I wanted to address on the Decision Day episode, Madison, baby, you need to bite a humble pie, because when you do something wrong to someone, that's not the time for you to turn up and decide, I'm going to go harder in the paint and defend my wrong actions. Initiate that verbal argument with Michelle. Yes, you did initiate it. And I've already said she did not treat David well. I acknowledge that. No one is negating that fact. But Michelle mistreating David and you being wrong in your actions can exist simultaneously. And they do, because you all were both wrong. So there was no need for you to turn up and start this verbal altercation. And then when you walk out, give mean girl behavior saying, oh, put me in the ring with Michelle, she wouldn't last 2 seconds. Like, what are you doing? That says a lot about your character. And which, if personally, if I were David, that would be alarming to me, the fact that you did something of this magnitude and then you carried a lie for a whole season and then you get offended when you get called out and held accountable. Which leads me back to what I was saying in terms of, I feel like this was an ego boost for Madison. My assessment, I could be wrong, this is just my assessment as a viewer, but my assessment is Madison is an attractive blonde white woman who is accustomed to, an attractive young blonde white woman who is, this needs to be said. Madison is an attractive, young, blonde, white woman. And there's a reason I'm putting emphasis on that. So just follow me. Who is used to attracting a certain level of attention from the opposite sex. However, and this is something that she said. She had been single for a few years, and there's nothing wrong with that. Let's be clear. But my observation is that, yes, she's an attractive woman. She is used to getting a certain level of attention from men, but she had not gotten the attention that ultimately would yield the commitment of a marriage from a man. And I think part of that could be that, okay, she hadn't met the person that she was meant to be. Let's be clear. I'm not shaming her for being single or for not being married. That's not the point that I'm trying to make. I just want to preface with that. But I think that was the reason she did the show. And that was the reason that the experts ultimately paired her with Alan, who was someone that she normally would not go after physically, but had the qualities that she said she wanted in a partner. Now, excuse me, something else that she said on another interview is that there were other things where they just weren't compatible. And we'll have to take her word for that. And I'm comfortable acknowledging that she was the one in this experience, so I can't take that from her. However, the other point that I wanted to get to, and something that Pastor Cal raised after he met with Madison, after the experts met with Madison and David when this came out, is that, hey, we asked you during the interviewing, pre-matchmaking, whatever process, if you were open to someone of another color. And they rolled the tape. They brought out the receipts. And her response was, well, I've dated, but I prefer, you know, I'd be open to it, but I prefer a Caucasian man. And I can't remember which expert it was that she was speaking with in this conversation, but I do remember their response being, well, this is marriage, and this isn't a time for us to experiment with something that you might be open to. And so after they cut that scene and went back to their session with the experts, Pastor Cal said, if David were to be walking down the street and approached you, he wouldn't stand a chance because he identifies as a Black man. And so her response was, well, that's not necessarily true. I've dated Black guys before. Translation, how I interpreted that, this is not fact, this is my interpretation, is I've dated Black guys casually and or slept with them, but never considered them long-term for marriage. So for me, if I'm David, I would consider that being a person of color. Now, again, this may not be of importance to him, but for me as a Black woman, it would be of importance to me. Not necessarily the fact that you, this may be your first serious relationship with a Black man, but I would question, hey, why were you hesitant when they asked you this? And let's have a real conversation. If I were to approach you off this platform, would I stand a chance? Which leads me to my next point. I personally don't think he would have stood a chance. I think if they had met at Buffalo Wild Wings or the taco shop or whatever they were doing off camera, I don't think that had he shot his shot, she would have been receptive to it. I personally think that, again, Madison's dating experiences had not yielded what she said she wanted, which was marriage. And I think that this situation with David made her feel chosen. It was an ego boost. And I think he provides her with the ego. I do think she's attracted to him sexually. I will say that. But I also think that the relationship provides her with the ego boost she needs because he clearly is very, very sexually attracted to her. He makes that obvious. And so I think he provides that for her. And respectfully, I think what she provides for him, I think David's bar is a little lower. And what I mean by that, follow with me. What I mean is for men, physical and sexual attraction, it's an emotional need. So if a man is not physically, sexually attracted to you, nothing is moving forward. He might sleep with you because men and women are wired differently and view sex differently. But in terms of him pursuing a real commitment with you, that is not going to happen if a man is not attracted to you. So that's the first thing. David obviously is very physically attracted to her. Okay. That's the first thing. The second thing is my observation from seeing him on the show, I do think David ultimately is a nice guy. Let's just say that. And I do think he got a bad rap for living in his parents' basement. I stated that earlier. I think ultimately David comes across to me as someone like all of us who desires love. But I think ultimately, I don't think he's a complex individual, meaning that I think as long as he's physically attracted to her and the connection is there, they have some common interests, starting with them enjoying working out, and that Madison just listened to him and she expressed interest in him, which if you listen to some of the advice from men, men really do take notice of, hey, she likes me. Like, and I'm not saying that they'll pursue something serious with a woman just because she likes them. But if this is a woman that they have equal interest in each other, that goes a long way with men. So the point to land the plane, I think that he's sexually attracted to Madison. She listened to him in a time during a difficult season when the wife he was matched with was not providing those needs. And I think that she likes him. I do think she likes him. But I still think they're going a little hard in the paint to prove how deep their love is and all of this. The other thing I wanted to note that is a bit of a red flag for me when it comes to them. In an interview they did, they shared that some of their conversations during this process, one of the things that Madison told him, she was trying to encourage him in his marriage with Michelle, according to them. And one of the things that she said to him was, don't go back into your old ways. So this leads me to believe, the Scooby-Doo detective that I am, that this is not outside of the norm for him to seek attention elsewhere when his partner is not giving him what it is that he needs at the time. And the reason that's alarming for me is there are three stages of a romantic relationship, of love. Let me back this up. And I just want to say that I am citing information from a Forbes article by Mark Travers. And the title of this article is Two Hard Pills to Swallow for a Successful Marriage by a Psychologist. And in this article, they outline the three stages of love. And they are the three phases, rather. They are described as number one, romantic love. Number two, building a life together. And number three, mature, lasting love. My observation, within a year, they're still in the romantic love phase. And this is described as the honeymoon phase, where passion and excitement are high. Small hurts may feel insignificant as positive emotions override them. Phase two, building a life together, is described as responsibilities grow, so do challenges. This is when couples experience real conflicts and must learn to repair and adapt. Phase three, mature, lasting love, is described as a deeper, more stable form of love emerges based on trust, shared history, and emotional security rather than just passion. Now, let me say this. I'm not claiming to be clairvoyant. I'm not saying that they won't make it to phase three. My question is not if phase two arrives, but when phase two arrives, which is building a life together. And I'm aware they already live together. They clearly are intertwined in each other's social circles, family, all the things. But what I mean in terms of building a life together, once this year dies down and the passion adjusts, because passion does adjust in long-term relationships, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you'll have moments of high passion, you'll have moments of low passion, because life comes, it happens. So my question is, knowing that David has a habit of this, of displaying this type of behavior, when this
podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Happens. How is he going to respond? And my observation is that at this point, I wonder if a motivating factor for them making it through these difficult times that they have acknowledged that they've had and moments of conflict is simply because they don't want egg on their face and for people to say, aha, you did all this and you didn't end up together. That's one theory. And the other alarming thing was, I can't remember if it was on the last episode of the season or this interview, an interview they did, But there was at one point where David said Madison completes him. And that is always questionable for me when someone makes a statement that their partner completes them. The reason being is your partner is not meant to be completion. You are supposed to show up in your relationship, marriage, whatever the case may be, as a whole human being, and your partner is supposed to be a positive addition to your life to help you fulfill your purpose on this earth. But they're not supposed to complete you. So anytime somebody pulls out the Jerry Maguire line, automatically a red flag goes up for me, because that just shows it makes me question your view on relationships and why you think this person should complete you. And if there's a point in life when she can't complete you, like what happens when the children come and you both express that you desire to have kids and her attention has to shift to this being or these beings that can't survive on their own, that can't care for themselves. How will you handle that then? And again, God forbid, I'm not speaking any type of postpartum depression or anything like that, but this is a real adjustment. And I just think that, you know, there was a post Madison made, quote unquote, doing the hard launch of their relationship. And the quote was along the lines of, love always wins. Okay, like, girl, this ain't the Obama era when gay marriage just got approved. Like, what are we doing? Love always wins. It's extra. You could have just kept it at, you could have just really just posted your pictures and went. You didn't need to say that, or just left it at, it was unconventional. I'm glad we made it through. Looking forward to continuing our lives together, something like that. But continuing to go hard in the paint, the post that I've seen flying around from her, from him. It's given publicity to her. Like, you really are acting like you Tom Cruise jumping on Oprah's sofa at this point. And I really, for those reasons, it's questionable for me. My final thoughts. I would love to see David and Camille make it. I think they're a lovely couple. They again appear to desire marriage for the right reasons. I hope that everything continues to go well with Juan and his girlfriend, and that Carla meets and finds the love that she deserves. I wish MM and Brandon the best. He is a lot. He's a big personality, but she appears to be able to handle him. I do think it would have been wise for them to pace themselves, but not everyone thinks that way. As far as Michelle, I think it appears that she has come around and recognized some areas of growth for her. And so I hope that she finds all of the things that she's looking for. And now she's able to be more honest, even in terms of how important financial stability is for her, because that appears to be a big thing. But I do want to encourage sis to not marry for love, because financial situations can change at the drop of a hat. We see what this market is doing. So I don't think that's wise, but I don't fault her for desiring that. But I do hope that she chooses to be kind in her dating endeavors going forward. But nonetheless, she was done wrong. And I'm really glad that Alan came out on top. He appears to be in a happy relationship. I love that for him, that he chose peace. As far as Madison and David, the jury's still out. Overall, the way they got together was messed up. I think they're extra. I have a lot of unpopular opinions in terms of their relationship, but these are my opinions. This is not me forcing it on anyone. But yeah, I think there are a lot of red flags that I've noticed. The prom outfits, the commitment rings, like, it's just a bit over the top. And again, at our big age, I don't see the reason to do that. I think you're going hard in the paint because ultimately you know you're wrong and you still have not told the truth as far as when you actually started hooking up, when this all started. I don't think you're being honest about that. So there's that. I want to move on to Felicia Rashad's interview on The Breakfast Club. And so Felicia Rashad recently did an interview on The Breakfast Club, which aired about a week ago. And the reason for her appearance was to discuss her directorial debut for the Broadway play Purpose. Now, to be clear, this is not her first time directing, but this was her first time directing a Broadway play. And the reason I wanted to highlight this interview is just because there was so much encouragement shared in this interview for me. And Felicia Rashad is such a light, such a goat in not just the entertainment industry for Black people, but just Hollywood, period. And I love hearing them give her her flowers. And some of the things that I enjoyed most about the interview, I enjoyed hearing her talk about her resume, talk about her and her sister Debbie Allen's rise to where they are now, as well as their childhood, because they grew up in South Carolina during a period of legal segregation. And I loved hearing them talk about their parents and hearing her talk about their parents and speak so highly of them, and the way her mother explained segregation to them as kids. And I really want to encourage you all to listen to the interview if you haven't, but I really enjoyed it. And the way her mother went about it, it was in such a way that instilled such hope. And she, in the process of instilling hope, she also educated them on multiple things. And that was so uplifting for me. And I loved hearing the way that she spoke about her time as a dean at Howard University, as someone that did not get the opportunity to go to an HBCU. I graduated from Troy University, the main campus in Troy, Alabama. And I'm grateful that I was able to continue my education. But something that my best friend and I always say is that we wish we had had the opportunity to attend an HBCU, and just the camaraderie, the networking that takes place, it just appears to be something that is unlike any other. And any friends or acquaintances that I've come across that did get that experience, they share those sentiments and you see them living that out, the excitement to go back to homecoming every year, and just the strong alumni network. It's unlike anything. And just hearing also the sense of pride that they have for their alma maters and just HBCUs in general is unmatched. And so I enjoyed hearing her speak about that and hearing her speak about Chadwick Boseman, because he was one of her students during her time at Howard. That was really special. And hearing her give him his flowers and say, yes, he was such a talented actor, but he was all these other things that people don't know as well. And so I really enjoyed hearing that. And the final thing that meant so much is the closing question that Charlamagne asked her is, what is a lesson that you've now, and I'm paraphrasing, that you've mastered that you wish you had learned earlier in life? And her response to that question was, I'm enough. And she said, I wish I had learned this earlier in life. And it seems so simple, but she said, you know, as women, and then especially young women, we struggle with comparison and is my body okay? Is my hair long enough? Am I not this? Am I not that? And I will be completely transparent that is something that I have struggled with and still every now and then do struggle with. And I think that I appreciated that. I appreciate any type of sage wisdom. And I appreciated that that was the closing portion of the interview for any woman, but especially young women, to hear that and get that established in their foundation as they continue to move through life. I greatly enjoyed that. And I just appreciate her energy is just so calm and graceful. And one thing I've recognized about myself as I have gotten older is just the way that I am drawn towards people with calm energy. Because for me, I had to develop a sense of calmness. And because there was a period in my life where everything I had known, well, a large deal of it was blowing up right before me. I was in a period of a career transition, a long-term relationship was ending, my stability as far as a place to live was up in the air. And I remembered seeing this quote and it said, calm is a superpower. And that helped me, being someone that navigates anxiety. That helped me so much. And this was about 8 years ago now. And that quote has stuck with me. And the point that I wanted to make is just that people that have a natural calm energy, I'm drawn to that because I had to sharpen having a calm spirit. And I just am such awe of her, her grace, her calmness, her wisdom, her talent. I could go on and on, but I really encourage you all to listen to that interview. Now, with that being said, the last thing I want to touch on is the thing going on at the Breakfast Club regarding Jess Hilarious and Lauren LaRosa. So, for anyone who has not kept up with it or may not be aware, the comedian Jess Hilarious was brought on last year as a co-host of The Breakfast Club after them essentially trying out interviewing several different hosts. And to be honest, I like Jess Hilarious. I came to know her through a friend sharing a couple of videos of hers with me through Instagram. I do think she's funny. And so I could understand from an entertainment aspect why they brought her on as a co-host. Now, what ended up happening is she had to go out on maternity leave rather quickly after beginning her time on The Breakfast Club. And during that time, she needed someone to fill in for her, which in comes Lauren LaRosa, who has a journalism background, previously worked at TMZ, long resume, very well-qualified, sharp young lady. You know, I watched the two interviews of hers that I have seen is her interview with Portia Williams and then this last interview that I just talked about with Felicia Rashad. I'm very impressed with her. I think it's clear that she has a journalism background and she does her research before these guests come on. And I think she does a great job. Now, unpopular opinion. Maybe some of you ladies, listeners will agree. Maybe you won't. I completely respect wherever you are with this. First and foremost, I want to say as a woman that is in corporate and at some point I do desire to have a family when I'm married, I can understand as women, even if you have a supportive management team, that fear that may be in the back of your head that you may not say of, when I come back from maternity leave, is my position really secure? What's going to happen while I'm gone? How is this going to flow? How are my teams going to be handled? How are my responsibilities going to be taken care of? All of these things. So as a woman, I want to put that out there because I have not yet had a child, but these are things that I've thought about, right? This is where my unpopular opinion comes in. If I were Jess, Jessica to Jessica, personally, I see nothing wrong with her wanting to expand her family and have another child. Blessings to you. That's amazing. However, the way I think and how I would have handled it personally, according to her, she planned this baby. This was not an uh-oh baby. So this is why I feel inclined to give this opinion, because this wasn't an uh-oh. This baby was planned. I personally would have waited minimum 1/4 to a year being in my position before I get pregnant. You could have even started trying in Q3, but I definitely wouldn't have just signed on the dotted line and then pop up, hey guys, clear blue came back, your girl's pregnant. I wouldn't have done that. The reason I wouldn't have done that is because clearly they offered you the position for a reason, because they saw value in you and they felt that you could add value to the organization. But what needs to be acknowledged is that initially when you get a new position, you're not still in the interview, but you're still in the trial phase. Like, you all haven't decided to really cuff each other. So even though you signed a contract, you're still in a position where you need to show your value. And for you to purposefully get pregnant during that time, I don't think that was wise. And I don't know who is in her corner. I don't know who's providing counsel to her. But and legally, right, no one can say this to her. This is my opinion. But if I were your homegirl, and I could say this to you off the record without you filing suit, I would have tapped you and been like, you need to hold off. Like, if you can get pregnant within, like, just like that, hold off. There's no reason this has to be right now. Enjoy this ride. Do what you need to do. Show your value. And then we can, okay, then plan for an addition to your family. But not a second before. The other thing that I don't agree with is her announcing the position before iHeart got to. I think that was irresponsible. And I think you're doing a few things that are leaving a bad taste in people's mouth. And I don't know what the terms of her contract are. I don't know if it's a year by year, if it's 2 years. I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. But I think you're starting out on the wrong foot. I think you're getting infatuation confused with love in this situation, because they offered you a contract. They're not in love with you. They're infatuated. You still need to get to the third date. Like, you've had two dates and it went well. Cool. But you still need to get to the third date. So those are the two things as far as Jess that I don't agree with. Now, catching up to speed, once she was back, I don't know what the communication was, what the terms were, if the agreement was Lauren was supposed to leave as soon as she got back. I don't know if iHeart went back on that. I don't know. But I do know when she returned, Lauren was still there. And this is where the mess begins. So there were issues of them being on the segment and Jessica initially just telling Lauren to hush. She told her shut up, and then people in the comments were calling that out. So then the next occurrence, she told her to hush. And then according to Jess, Charlamagne texted her and said, no, you told her to shut up, play into the beef. Continue to tell her to shut up. My issue is, first and foremost, I don't like to see this between two Black women, because what I see happening is it's essentially coming off like there's only room for one of us. And I don't like, because I think that nurtures a crabs in a barrel mindset amongst us as Black women, which I don't like. Number two, these issues should have been handled off camera. Number three, if it's true that Charlamagne is did send her this text message. That's inappropriate. And also, you're encouraging a hostile work environment at this point. Like, and I understand that someone seeing this play out may not even understand the severity of what's going on. But being someone that has been in a hostile work environment, this is completely inappropriate. And also, I want to take into account that I'm not saying at all that Jess is experiencing any type of postpartum depression, but she is postpartum. She did just have a baby. So all of this, I imagine, is a lot on her mentally. And physically, I don't know how much sleep she's getting. I don't know how much help she has at home, if they've decided to bring in outside help. I don't know these things. But I do know, as a woman, your body has just gone through major changes, and coming back to work is often not the easiest thing for women. And then you come back into this type of environment, that's not the healthiest situation. So again, if that is in fact true, that's not okay. And catching up where I think it went further left, Jess should have never done that live. Once she got frustrated after Corey Holcomb said what he said, she never should have done that live. I can completely understand and respect you wanting to defend yourself, but the bottom line is you have a great opportunity in front of you, and leave Corey Holcomb where he's at. You all have had apparently this beef for a while. Leave him where he's at. That was not the way to handle that, because what you're doing is Corey Holcomb doesn't need to answer to iHeart. You do. You have to go to work with these people the next day and address this. And now it's getting aired out on the air when it never should have. This is supposed to be a situation amongst coworkers. Yes, you all are in the entertainment space, but ultimately you all are coworkers, and you need to be able to conduct yourselves as such and in a professional manner and not play into this type of rhetoric. And it appears perhaps that, you know, I saw they did a spiff of like the boy is mine, like the job is mine type thing. So I'm hoping that they've been able to get past this, and they're hoping they're able to stay in this place. But going forward, like, I want Jess to win. I want Lauren to win. But I think that telling anybody, we're adults, don't tell me to shut up. Don't speak over me. Like, don't tell me to hush. That's inappropriate. I think there are ways for this to be handled. And as far as Lauren, I'm curious as to how her situation is being handled. And I'm hoping that they have increased her pay or something, because again, very talented. She's clearly taking on more responsibility by still being there after her maternity leave. So I'm hoping that they are doing right by her. I hope this gets resolved in a positive manner, and that everybody's able to learn from this what they need to. But yeah, the way this was handled was not it. Like, it was entertainment and fodder for us, but it's not good for the people involved. It's just not. It's not a good look. I think that I hope for Jess, she's able to learn from this and conduct herself differently going forward and move differently going forward. And I hope that Lauren, if they are not doing right by her at iHeart, that she's able to capitalize off of this and really expand her territory going forward. So, Style Crew, that's it. That's all I got. This is the first episode of These Are My Thoughts. And I hope you enjoyed it. Leave me a comment under the episode description. Let's talk about it even further. I'd love to get your thoughts on each of these three topics, or if there's a particular one that interests you. I appreciate your continued support, as well as any new listeners that tune into the episode. And I look forward to continuing season two. I'll be back this Thursday with another amazing episode. We have an author, Jerrica Yvonne Henderson, on, the author of Hashtag Fierce and Favored. I can't wait for you all to hear that episode and hear all the gems that she drops. And just continue to support all of the episodes. We always have some amazingly talented guests. And leave us a review, subscribe to the podcast, to my channel, Style by Jessica Lauren on YouTube. Follow us on Instagram, Style in Conversation Pod. And I look forward to you all checking in with us next Thursday. And with that, we are out, Style Crew. Hey, Style Crew, make sure you're keeping up with our podcast through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, as well as the Podcast Index. And if you'd like to view the podcast visually, check out my YouTube channel, Styled by Jessica Lauren.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.